What does it take to become an elite 40K player? How do the top competitors overcome bad dice? The competitive 40K Network presents Art of War Unbroken. Insight into the game plans of the top players on the planet with your hosts, Blake Law and the Art of War coaches.
Hello and welcome to Art of War Unbroken. Champions may lose, but their spirits remain unbroken. I'm your host, as always, Blake Law. This is episode 68 of the podcast, and we are doing something we've never done before this episode. We are going to bring on a guest who played another guest, and we're going to interview him back to back. So we're bringing on the Night Player today. We're going to do a full Unbroken episode with him, and then tomorrow we're going to drop another episode where we're bringing on the Dark Angel Player. I think you can fill in the blanks there on who's who here, but we're going to get both perspectives and do back-to-back episodes on this. As always, they say we learn the most from our losses, and that is exactly what the show aims to do. We're going to interview an elite player who has lost 1-2 games at a major event, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to break it down. We are going to not blame dice. We're going to blame ourselves and figure it all out. We are talking about Nova today, one of my favorite events. It was a blast. It is the reason you are getting this bonus episode, because I was so dog tired that I could not record. So enjoy it, because I think it's going to be very, very interesting to get this back-to-back perspective. Now, this is part one of the podcast. In this part, we're going to be analyzing the game, talking about common mistakes, talking about secondaries, target priority, and all of the above. In part two, which is available to subscribers at theartofwar40k.com, we are going to be deep diving into all the things, all the stuff, as Brad would say. We're going to be talking about strategy, list building. We're going to be talking about what they plan to do to adjust in the meta. And we're going to be talking about my personal favorite, the elite player mindset. My co-host today is not Brad. Again, I'm so sad. I'm so sorry for everybody out there that we had to bring this man on. He was once called the Tom Brady of 40K. Now he is commonly referred to as the Tony Romo of 40K. RIP, he's kind of the John Madden of 40K, if I had to be honest. I am, of course, talking about the man. He's won it all. He's been there. He's done that. Mr. Nikhil Nanavati.
You almost got my pronunciation, Blake. You got the whole thing. John Madden, Tony Romo, Tom Brady. You nailed them all, and then you got Nikhil wrong. Unbelievable.
I said it right.
No, it's Nikhil. Come on. Keep it up.
Nikhil.
Good job.
That doesn't count. That's not a mispronunciation. I think I nailed it. I can spell it. That's all that
spell
matters.
Spell it. Go ahead.
Nikhil.
Well done.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even look at that. I rattled it off for those listening. Not even in front of me. Just knew it.
Blake knows my name. My full legal name. Proud of you.
I do. I know your dad's name. I know your mom's name.
You're just
treated. I know everything. I know everything about your life. I know your social security number.
I hope not.
I do. I'm gonna buy some things under it. You're gonna get your credit scores about to be tanked, man. But that's neither here nor there, Nick. Our guest today is one of my personal favorite guests. We are talking about something that I love, so I'm excited. We're bringing on the man, the myth, the legend, the best night player on planet Earth, the one, the only, Mr. Brian Jones.
Like, that is a really tall intro to live up to. I don't know that I would say that, but I am having a blast playing nights.
I like that you're doing free blades, man. That's kind of my favorite part about all of your list. And the list you brought that we're about to talk about, by the way, for those listening, is so wacky. It's so out there, and no one's doing what you're doing, and I love that.
Free blades is, I think it's the coolest thing. And for me, like 40K, I love playing competitively, obviously, but like, right, we're all playing with toy soldiers because we like the story or some part of the setting or something. So for me, every night getting to be like its own kind of special, unique story, and they're all coming together. It was the Army of Renown when it came out. I was just like, done. I'm there. Yep. Let's do it.
I wanted to tell you, since we played, for those listening, the last time Brian came on, I think it was like 2 or 3 months ago, we were in the middle of talking to him, and I had a new and shrink wrap Knights book that had been sitting there for like 2 months, and I literally just went and got it, ripped it open, and started reading it, and I've been playing Knights again since that episode. Like, that was the day it started. He got me fired up again. So I'm bringing them to the narrative in New Mexico in November, actually. And for the exact reason that you said, is that every night can kind of be their own like story, and you can make a crazy backstory for each of them, like they were dishonored or whatever kind of nonsense you want to come up with for free blade. So,
oh yeah. If you look at my actual list, so each of my knights is either named after one of my miniature dachshunds or a Star Wars character. So nice. I'm full into giving each of them an identity.
Nice. Yeah. I want to go deep into it for the narrative because it's like they're going to make it into like actual 40K lore. So I'm like, I want to make it really strange and put a little bit of like my name into it. So if it ever makes it to a book, they're like, ah, yeah, that was Blake who did that.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah, a little bit goofy.
We gotta bring this back to what this is about. Getting better at 40K, you know.
So, Nick, getting better at 40K involves a whole process.
This is part of the process. All right. I'm the coach here. All right, Mr. Hostess with the Gnosis. You stay in your lane. I'm gonna stay in mine.
Brian,
how are you doing tonight? How are you doing this fine evening?
I'm great, Nick. It's a blast to get to talk to you. We got to see each other briefly at Nova. You were kind enough to narrate one of my games, or I guess commentate one of my games, not just narrate.
Well, you know what, Brian? I think that's what we're here to talk about, and I'm really excited to do it because, like Blake said in the beginning, we're going to get your half of the story and our other Dark Angel friends. Half of the story. So why don't you paint me a pretty picture and tell me about this wonderful game?
Before we start there, Nick, actually, Nick is new to Unbroken, so I apologize for everyone who said he just freaking broke the entire format of the show.
The entire format where you were talking about who even knows what for minutes.
You gotta build a picture, Nick. In order to be a better player, you have to be a better 40K fan. That's half of it, man.
I'm sorry. Teach me how to be a 40K fan.
I would say the other part is we're here talking to players who lose. And for me, it's got to remember what you enjoy about the game outside of just winning and losing.
Yeah.
Is why I play with my toy soldiers. That's my only counterpoint, Nick. That's
100%.
I'm getting out of the unbroken spirit. I'm sorry. I'm a bad Bradley.
You're a bad Brad. But Brian, tell us a little bit about the Nova format because we usually start, Nick, for those who don't know out there, we talk about the terrain layout of the event. So tell us a little bit about what the terrain was like at Nova.
So Nova used the Games Workshop actual US Open terrain and deployments. So each day one terrain and then day two terrain, but it was the plexiglass area terrain pieces. So you had four big area ruins, two smaller obscuring kind of ruins that at least on day one were in the middle, and then still there, I think, in day two. Trying to remember. And then four forests that are dense terrain. And then the one interesting part about Nova that I think it threw all of us is that Nova is 9 rounds. That is a lot of 40K over 3 days. After 5 rounds, you split into 16-man pods or brackets. With the whole gist being, after 5 rounds of 40K, anybody is like, this is a lot. What am I still playing for? You get put into a bracket. Now it's kind of elimination, and you're back playing with people with the exact same record, and you got a chance to play for something again. So yeah. I do love the format. I think it's great as far as keeping engagement all the way through and people feeling like invested in it versus the like day two drops of, hey, what am I even here for anymore? So love Nova. I've been every year I could and was really, really excited to come back to it this year after it had to take 2 years off due to COVID, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think. What do you think about the terrain as it relates to Knights? Because there's been some mixed feelings about Knights on the GW boards, just because you got a lot of obscuring big pieces that kind of hurts Knights. But at the same time, some of the formats, for example, the one where the middle obscuring are to the side, leaves this massive lane of murder. So what are your thoughts on it?
So I will caveat this by saying the rule that has now been removed from the FAQ, but Nova was playing with the 2-inch engagement range while in ruins. Sasha and I, as you guys find out from this game, had to frequently ask about that rule as we figured out how to fight each other and move through. That, I think, changed things for me a little bit, but now that it's gone, I love the US Open terrain. I think there's the day two terrain is a little bit harder. And I'll to describe that. The terrain pieces are facing each other in a hammer and anvil format. So the fronts of the buildings are facing each other from the long table edges. And it can create some pretty difficult situations for Knights as far as getting actual non-obscuring line of sight on your opponent. But I actually absolutely love day one. The day one terrain there and the mission packet, I think, is phenomenal. And I think it allows Knights to be competitive, but I don't think that we're overbearing. We're definitely beatable.
Yeah, I agree. So let's now, Nick, this is where we go. So if you...
Is this the Nickening? Is this where Brad comes in with the Bradening, but now it's the Nickening?
No, the Nickening is part two. God, I'm sorry, everybody. Nick's a noob. The Nickening's part two, Nick. I'm going to call it the Bradening. You don't even get the Nickening this
time. Stop. Nickening is part two, Blake. Yeah, we already decreed. It's been written in an oath.
All right, Brian, tell us about your list. Your list.
I asked that question. Excuse you, Brian. Could you tell us about your list, please?
Happy to. So I will say, first and foremost, lessons for those wanting to get better and competitive is try out your list before a tournament. I did not try out this list before going to Nova and became incredibly lucky. Had I known it a little bit better, might have made some different plays.
Brian, I will say I generally completely agree with that advice and stand by it. But maybe there's something you said. You did pretty well with this army, having never played before. And Jack YOLO'd off to Necrons and won the thing.
That's true. There could be something to where you're so flexible with it, you don't have a preset plan, that maybe that's what it is. You don't come in going, all right, I have to do this, this, and this. These will be my moves every game. Like, I was just kind of rolling with the flow. But yeah, I put together a list. Now that Knights are kind of in vogue, we're back again, both Chaos and Loyalists, you know, Knights are trotting on tables. I knew I wanted to bring a Castellan to the table just for that mirror match, because I have whiffed when only bringing a Crusader Errant too many times to want to do it in 9 rounds. So that I knew I wanted to fit the Castellan into my list. And so for me, with the restrictions around Nephilim, I knew that that meant I was bringing 6 Armigers so that I would have 6 CP. Just for anybody who's thinking about list building for Knights, if you have 5 or less Armigers and not 3 Questorus class, you will not get 6 CP. You will only get 3. If you have 6 or more Armigers, it doesn't matter, as long as you have at least one of the Titanic model, you will get the full 6 CP. That, to me, is really, really important in this wonderful world of fewer starting CP. So I made sure that I had 6 Armigers in there. And that left me just so I split those out, taking 3 Warglaives, 1 Helverin, and 2 Moiraxes with Lightning Locks. And then I got to round out my list with Wally the Gallant, named after my youngest dog, who was kitted out to charge forward and smash things. He's Questor Imperialis, and rather than giving him Sanctuary for 4-up Invuln in combat, I elected to give him Helm of the Nameless Warrior, which he had a Landstar Warlord trait to move really fast, and then with the Helm, in combat, any wound rolls of 6, the damage profile of the weapon becomes mortal wound.
I need to ask Brian, was this characteristic of Wally your dog, as in maximum offense, get there as fast as you can, or is Wally your dog like that in real life?
Yeah, Wally, so he's a bull in a china shop, our dog. Yeah. He's, he's a half, like, a half factorial bigger than our other two, and he has no concept that he's bigger. So, he's 4 years old going on 3 months.
It's very fitting he's a gallant.
Yeah, he's a gallant.
Got it.
So the Helm of the Nameless Warrior is so sweet, by the way. Like, that, the whole concept of it is so sweet.
I think it kind of flew under the radar initially with the Codex, because everyone looked at calculated targeting and went, mortals, why do we need anything else? But having 2 sources of it, having a way to get some mortals in combat or in shooting, particularly as we were talking about with the obscuring line of sight, it can really give you options as far as removing some really brick units that are out there. I don't know how I kill Thousand Suns, Scarab Occult Terminators without both options.
Is that relic restricted to Imperialis?
It is. It is restricted to just Imperialis, which is, and that's the, again, another cool part about the Freeblade Army of Renown is that you can mix and match with the Questorus allegiances. So my Castellan is Mechanicus, my Moiraxes are Mechanicus, and then the Warglaive, Helverin, and Gallant are all Imperialis.
Nice. So you're, I think that makes it, you come up with some really wacky combos. You can do weird things because you can mix, which you can't do when you just go straight one way or the other.
And House Tyrannus is amazing. Field of Pain's great. Being Mechanicus is awesome. Zombie Knights are amazing. But for me, I love the Freely Lance because it really lets you, with the mixture of Allegiance and the Martial Traditions, you can really cater each unit to specifically fill a good niche and really feel like they're complimented in what you're trying to do.
During the Blakening in part 2, there are so many stupid combos with Knights. Like, it's unbelievable. I just sit there. I've read the Codex a million times now, and every time I'm like, oh, what if you, like, move this around, and with Free Blades, it just opens up every single door. You can even take any of the traits from any of the houses. You can just CP them in with the Warlord trait, which you told me, like, a week ago, which is cool. Yep. So,
yeah. And but, that, I guess... to clarify, the Castellan is my warlord and does take that warlord trait. I spent the CP to get him two warlord traits, but he's got the Army of Renown's one, which is Echoes of the Past. So he gets the House Raven household trait, which means he can advance and shoot. And since Castellans have big badasses now and can only move 8 inches, that extra D6 move to get to touch that piece of terrain or whatever else each turn is really important.
Huge.
And then the other one he's got is Ion Bulwark, so he's always got a 4-up in vulnerable against shooting. So when you do shoot him, 50-50 odds, although with me rolling the dice, it's like 20-80 odds, I'll make it safe.
And the crazy is that you hit Forge Master on him too, which is an interesting pick and really only applicable for Castellan almost.
Because he's going to stay most of the time in my deployment zone, long range. Forge Master Exalted Court upgrade is Mechanicus only, and he is -1 damage as long as he is within my deployment zone.
So good.
So Brian, Blake, I'm not super savvy with the Knights. I'm a poor man's Brad. So how does this army try to play on the table? Like, obviously, Knights are a bunch of really powerful combat shooting monster knight things that just go kill people. But are you trying to play the range game? Are you trying to push forward with some and stay back with others? Everything blitzes?
So it's you have to be match dependent now with so many different armies in the meta. And that's why I like this list. I will say I've fallen in the trap before of, and I still do it sometimes when I get on a table with knights, of just like, tally ho, we're charging forward, we're going to kill whatever we can. And you wind up trading really disproportionately as you kill like a 10-man guard squad with your knight and then he gets domed. So this list lets you be conservative. If you're facing like a Blood Angels type list where they're fast-moving melee, you can deploy conservatively. You've got counterpunch with both your war glaives and the gallant for melee. And then you have shooting to punish anything that gets stuck out in the open. But I really took this list, Nick, with a thought of a balanced approach. I could kind of flex into aggression or trying to play backside of the table.
I'm seeing that. The Gallant Castellan combo is really interesting. It's like you can really blitz somebody in close combat, make them respect that fact. And also there's a Castellan blasting you from across the board. That's a really, I've not seen that done with the latest Knight Codex at all. I think that's pretty cool.
And by making the Castellan that Forge Master, you really have to, you have to choose your poison as my opponent of what am I going to try to kill. And a lot of times it can make people go, that thing's just going to be too hard to kill. I'm going to try to ignore it, which this will actually play into the game we're going to talk about here, as Sasha kind of took that approach. And it can really let you get back in the game when you manage to roll dice well.
I think that's a perfect segue. We are actually talking about a game that, you know, episode one is today, episode two is tomorrow. We got the winner and the loser of this one. So, Blake, is this the first time we're ever getting a winner on Unbroken? Someone who, like, won the game and they're talking about it?
I'm not sure, actually. We've done a lot of episodes. I think maybe we have. I want to say that we talked about a win before. I want to say at least one or two times. But this is the first time we're talking to the winner and the loser of the same match back-to-back and getting a full episode out of it.
Well, that's super exciting. So, yeah. In this case, should we spoil it? Should we spoil the victor here?
Yeah, so, the winner is Brian. Brian won this game. I think most people
just
know
rip that Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rip it off. Yeah, Brian won this game.
To Sasha's credit, I don't know how I did. We both, if you watch the stream, you'll see both of us just staring at the table in turn five as we kind of figured it out.
Commentator, I was... And my brain game was over turn one, but I had to like stretch it out for five turns. And then around turn three or four, I was like, could Brian turn this back? And then turn five, somehow it actually happened. So that's,
I heard about this. I haven't watched it, but I heard it was like a legend. Like, oh, there was like a random person next to me, like, did you hear about that game with the Dark Angel player? And I'm like, oh, tell me more. You know, so
like we're here to from the horse's mouth, hear this legend. So what, Brian, paint me a picture. What was Sasha's army? What was this game? What is your illustrious legendary comeback?
So I got paired against Sasha at the end of day one. So this was the third round of the day. Everybody's a little bit tired. I was very excited. I've never had the chance to play Sasha before. And when I got paired, I had a couple people come and they're like, Sasha is one of the best human beings you will ever play 40K.
True. It's very true.
It is true. Sasha's great. 10 out of 10.
He's phenomenal. I had an absolute blast with this game. And I think just one of the greatest things that he and I did was we approached the table. He was playing Ravenwing. I know what Ravenwing is as far as like Dark Angels goes, but I'm not super familiar with all of their tricks. I strongly encourage anyone to do this in a competitive setting, even if you know you've gone 0-3 and you're not playing for much. Sasha and I began our game by talking to each other about our lists and saying, this is what each of these models can do. This is kind of what my bag of tricks is with them. You know, this is a strat that could give me this. This is what could advance and charge. This couldn't. Just running through everything in an abbreviated manner so that I knew what each thing could do, what I should be afraid of, what their bags of tricks were. There weren't going to be any gotchas. We both covered all of that ahead of time. And so when we went into deployment, there were no bad surprises. There was nothing. There's just never a chance for it feels bad because you're both upfront with each other and it leads to a really pleasant game. So I strongly encourage that for everybody in the competitive environment. Just, hey, are you familiar with my type of list? No? Let me give you a quick 30-second spiel.
Yeah, I agree. That's the way to do it for sure.
And I walked up to Sasha's list, which is packed with, it's got two full squads of Black Knights. It has five big Primaris Landspeeders that prior to watching Sasha roll his first turn of dice, I was like, oh, these things, my understanding is they're overcosted. There's not really a good enough shooting for it to be that dangerous. I think I'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And then he had two of the beautiful Rift Talons. That's what they're called, correct? The Flyers with Dark Talons.
Dark Talons.
Cannon combined in. They have a giant gun that opens holes in the warp, which is pretty cool. So when I looked at that, that was my initial big kind of scare was, well, that's a lot of mortal wounds. That is not something that's our high toughness and the invulnerable save is really like our calling card as far as defense goes. So that's not going to be good. So we were playing a Dawn of War style deployment at the end of day one. So the terrain was facing each other, like forward facing to each other for everybody who's kind of wanting to understand what that looked like. And then the outer two smaller pieces of obscuring were on the outer edges. We deployed. Sasha let me know, obviously, all of his army can advance and shoot and with no penalty, turn one. They can pretty much get to wherever they want. Raven, that's Ravenwing shtick for anybody who doesn't know. They get to where they're going very, very fast. And they get invulnerable saves by doing it. So I looked at this table and went, well, I think I've got to go first and take out some of these anti-night guns or else I'm going to be a load of trouble. Naturally, that meant Sasha went first. And we walked into our first turn and he picked up all three of my warglaives on the first turn. I never actually got to move them. I had put them at the back of my deployment zone behind obscuring terrain going, well, this is going to be my best bet of keeping them alive. And that ability to move, advance, and still shoot everything gave Sasha the ability to get lines of sight on them and really, really just hit me in the mouth from the get-go.
Was he moving most of his firepower kind of along both board edges on the sides to kind of get draw that angle to the back of the board?
He actually pushed strongly just up my left, his right side, concentrating his forces there, which was smart rather than potentially like right dividing and maybe failing to kill what he was going after. He decided, I'm going to come up this side and just try to push everything out of the way. And as I learned when he and I were talking in the pregame, he took Death on the Wind and Bring It Down, which pair incredibly well together because every time one of his Ravenwing units gets a killing blow on a unit, that's 2 points for him if it's in combat or shooting. And then Bring It Down, every time he kills an Arbiter, that's 2 points for him. So at the end of turn one, he had 6 points on Death in the Wind and 6 points on Bring It Down and already had 2 points on Behind Enemy Lines. So I'm looking at the scorecard after the top of turn one going, so he's got 16 points on secondary already, and we're not even scoring primary. This isn't good. It was just an incredibly impressive list. And for me, a very quick lesson in understanding that those Primaris feeders are not overcosted and lacking sufficient firepower. They are very dangerous.
And that when they get in that Ravenwing, man, they get so much better. The ability to move and shoot and get that 4+ invuln, like just to protect them, because then it's become a really like that point comes back, right? Because when you have a 4+ invuln that thing, it's just like not even worth shooting almost.
And so he pushed straight up that side, killing the warglaives. My gallant was unfortunately middle of the table, so was going to have a trek to go. Not looking, you know, he made sure to check his distances and everything. We knew there was no way for a turn one charge for the gallant. So I had some rough decisions there. And then he pushed up the side on the opposite end of the table for my Castellan, putting as much obscuring terrain as he could there. So I definitely had some uphill sledding as we went into the bottom of turn one.
Brian, before we get into how you recovered from this butchering of your army from Sasha. Do you think a mistake in your deployment could have been how you deployed your army? Because we're seeing Dawn of War style deployment, right? So you're across all 60 inches of the board. And Sasha, from the commentator's perspective, was able to drive up really hard up the right flank. as you just said, avoid charge range from your Gallant with pre-measuring and being a good player, and avoid a lot of line of sight from your Castellan because he's opposite side. So if your army was more huddled together, one flank, the other flank, whichever, do you think you'd be able to retaliate more when Sasha came into you? And I get that you were trying to go for a behind obscuring turn with the armagers, and on that style of deployment, there's only so many spots that are pretty far back and narrow for you to be able to hide. But if he got line of sight to you anyway, that's almost, who cares?
You're 100% correct. I think I underestimated his ability to move. And I obscuring terrain right is my Achilles heel. When people play me, I see them use it well. So I got really excited that it might protect me. Totally learned it didn't. The other point Nicola raises is that my army is only five drops. So the kind of gamesmanship that you can get in deployment to really try to drop, counter drop, see where your opponent's going, and you can line up the units. I can fail there pretty badly because I only got five drops. If you've got chaff, you know, he can drop two flyers, and I've already dropped more than half my army by the time he has to drop his first real unit. I think, candidly, I spread a little too much, and I do wish that I'd actually consolidated more in towards the middle, leaving the two pieces of obscuring terrain on my sides, and just forced him to have to deal with my whole army rather than being spread out between the two pieces of terrain. But wound up working out. I knew my Gallant does not have a way to advance and charge. I tell my opponents that right off the bat. So I know when an opponent goes first, if they're savvy, they can't avoid a turbo charge. Once I realized the type of list I was playing, I kind of knew that that would be out the window if he played smartly. And he did. He knew he wanted to leverage his ranged firepower and not come in to fight me until it was mop-up time. So I it's a long-winded way of saying, yes, Nick, you are correct. But I know there's also maybe not as much I could have.
No, fair enough. I just wanted to raise the point because I think a lot of people lose in deployment on Darnivore by taking up the width of their deployment zone and getting a flank crushed. So I wanted to see if that's what you thought happened here. But please go on. You know, don't let me
see. Yeah. Perhaps overconfidently, I thought, I've got three warglaves over here. I'll put the Moiraxes and then the Gallant, thinking I can go combat-y in either direction if I need to, depending on how he pushes. I did not expect to pick up all of my warglaves before I ever moved them. That was, as I said, an absolute hit in the mouth. And so it really kind of put me on my heels. And as I said, candidly, I thought after his turn one, I was like, I'm probably going to get tabled here. I'm going to need to play for as many points as I can because I think he's going to wind up picking everything up. And so I actually moved the Gallant on my turn. All I did was move him onto the center objective because it was, I believe, is abandoned sanctuary. So I think it's called secure the sanctuaries where you're going to get points for holding the middle. So I moved him onto that to hold him, knew that was going to give me 2 points on primary on the first turn. And I actually had him renew the oaths. That's 5 points for me in secondary. So I was doing my best attempt to try to match his furious pace in secondary. And the other
So you turn one. You turn one renewed with a character big boy.
A character big boy. I've said I'm not gonna charge anything. A Gallant's carrying around a stubber, and that's it. So I'm not really foregoing a ton of shooting. And it also would force Sasha, he needed to come and deal with that turn two, or I could keep doing. He's either gonna have to come deal with me, or I'm gonna keep racking up points by holding the middle, and he needs to hold. The other reason that I did that is that on a four up, we can pick up an honor point,
right?
Which is key when trying to balance your oaths and everything else. And I knew I wanted that chance to pick up another honor point as quick as I could, because getting an auto six and getting obsec by becoming virtuous was really important for me and to have any chance of surviving.
Yeah.
So
100%.
I then moved my two Moiraxes that were left in between the two central pieces of obscuring terrain in my deployment zone. So I put them in between them, not touching either piece, with the goal of he's going to have to come to me now to get line of sight to shoot. And I felt pretty confident in their ability to survive because I gave them both bondsmen from my Gallant, which he's a herald. So they then had a four up invuln in shooting and in combat. They get -1 damage. And then the martial tradition I give my Moiraxes is Honored Secretions, which is against 1 damage weapons, they get to add 1 to their armor save. So when they reduce the damage characteristic from 2 to 1, 1 on their armor save.
Pretty much every shot in the game, except for either that or they're wasting massive
shots. You're putting las cannons into them, which I'm fine with, right?
Right.
Like, that's not going into a Gallant or a Castellan. So I wanted to try to just force him to come and get me, give up the obscuring blocking and move blocking he had, and see where we could get to. I moved my Castellan into the middle of my deployment zone so that I could get his Meltaguns in range, because I looked at my what I had left on the table at turn one and said, I have to use every gun I have. I needed those four melted guns. And what that ended up letting me do is I got to use those melted guns to kill one of the Dark Talons. And I reduced the other one down to a single wound that I could then finish off with my Helverin Stubber as I split fired him. And between the Helverin, the Castellan, and I only got shooting out of one Moirax into some Black Knights. And I didn't even do a wound because shooting an AP2 gun into Space Marines is an exercise in frustration, unfortunately, with armor of contempt and everything else. And obviously, Black Knights are three wounds. It's pretty tough. I mean, there's something to chew through for a D1 gun. So I didn't pick up a single one. But I did manage to pick up one Dark Talon and two speeders. And I didn't think that was going to be enough. I got another speeder down to, I got two other speeders down to seven wounds remaining, but I didn't have enough firepower that could see either or that I would have been able to kill one. So I went, all right, this is probably going to be a pretty bad turn two. I mean, he's going to pick up the rest of my army. And what we wound up with was Sasha pushed into the middle, as I kind of hoped he would. He did decide, all right, I'm going to dedicate my firepower to killing this Gallant, get it out of the middle. I don't want to have to deal with it. I did not. And I don't really have any defensive tricks for him other than to rotate, which is, I mean, it is a four up, which is amazing. But I don't feel like I get the 50-50 odds on that ever. And so with all of these still anti-knight firepower he still had, he picked up the Gallant. But he didn't charge me, and he only did, with the plus one to the save and everything else, he only got my front armature down to seven wounds. And then he repaired one up to six on my turn. We're in a good place. All right.
Right.
I've got the Castellan. I've got two Moiraxes and a Helverin left. Let's see what can happen. And I managed to pick up all but two more of the speeders. And so all of a sudden now, I'm dial has kind of turned a little bit as we're coming out of the bottom of two that I might be able to survive just enough. And then that's when I realized that he still had two full blocks of Black Knights with plasma, which can advance and shoot with no penalty or with the assault. And what I had forgotten is he has Weapons of the Dark Age, which turns one of those squads from doing two damage with their rapid fire plasma or assault plasma guns to flat three every time. So as we moved into turn three and he popped that CP, quickly lost my remaining front Moirax, and then he charged and very quickly killed the other one and the bottom or top of turn three. So going into the bottom of three there, knowing we've got, I had three turns left, he's got two, and I got two models still on the table. And that was when I said, all right, I need to just commit to trying to get the points that I can. I moved my Helverin had been lurking over on the farther side of the table. The nice part about that model is it's a 60-inch range on those autocannons. So for me, with a 12-inch move, it's kind of ranged table. I moved him up to hold a center objective, gave him a clear line of sight to help continue to pick off the vehicles I needed to kill. And those autocannons at AP2, 3 damage, again, AP2 kind of is a frustration into Space Marines that armor content, but it did mean every failed save was a dead bike.
Right.
So I moved the Castellan onto my home objective, and Sasha made I think this was his mistake as far as locking up the game. And I'd be curious to see when he talks with you guys and he says,
yeah,
he elected to use his two remaining Talon Masters and a squad of Black Knights to trap my Castellan. Like, he surrounded my base so that I was stuck in my deployment zone on that objective and couldn't leave because their bases are big enough and there's enough of them that my base was never going to clear them with a normal move. But by doing so, he only left himself one squad of Black Knights and a squad of regular bikes. So we're talking just bolters on them to go and try to handle my Helverin. And what wound up happening is that Helverin survived four consecutive rounds of combat and shooting from a Black Knight squad.
Oh, gosh. How big was the Black Knight squad?
Five bikes. Whittled it down over time. I will be painting some extra nice decals onto Hermes because three of those rounds, he survived with one or two wounds remaining.
Oh, and that's the dream for knights. That's the best
it is.
Do.
Because, and that's why I realized in hindsight the mistake, if he had picked that model up, if he'd just thrown it all up, it didn't matter what the Castellan killed. And Nick, you said this on stream at the time, so credit to you for seeing it too. I can only hold one objective, right? With one model. That's it. That's all I can do. But the killing power and the threat of the Castellan was enough to make him split. And that's what let me, the Helverin hung on by the hair on his chinny chin chin, And so the Helverin not giving up that objective, because at that point I was virtuous. So he was OBSEC counts as 8. So Sasha could not out OBSEC me on the objective. I owned it. So I continued to own 2 instead of only owning 1, which is giving me 8 points on primary. And Sasha gave up objectives to come and push me. So I actually scored 12 instead of 8. And then same thing on turn 5. Instead of only scoring 4, I scored 12. And so as we went into the bottom of turn 5 with my Helverin alive with 1 wound and my Castellan alive, I looked at the table and I was, I believe at that point, I was down by 21 points on turn 5. I mean, it's still a huge hill to climb, but I went, all right, if I can score 12 on primary, that's 12. Where can I come up with another 9 points to put me over the top? Or sorry, 10 points to win. And what I realized then is that holding the middle objective at the end of that game would actually be 7 points for me, because it would be 2 points at the end of my turn. And then at the end of the game, whichever player controls it gets 5. So I went, all right, now I'm at 19 points. I've only got to find like 3 more. This isn't that bad. I can do this. And as we thought through it, I looked at my secondaries going, okay, I'm going to actually get a bonus on Honor the House at the end of the turn. So if I move my Helverin, we measured it and went, okay, all I got to do is advance him, because if he touches the middle objective, I own it. I have more OBSEC than the 3 bikes Sasha had on it. And then all I had to do was have my my Castellan was close enough. I nibbled away enough for him to move forward. He wasn't going to hold the objective because of how Sasha screened me, but I could get close enough to renew the Oath. And that's all I had to do. Was step forward, close enough to the objective to renew the Oath. No shooting needed. We literally had to do no shooting on the bottom of turn 5, because it presented me the option to move and hold primary, which was a 19-point swing, and then get 5 additional points from Renew the Oath, putting me over the top.
Wow. I think this is kind of the textbook. This is a textbook unbroken match, actually, because this is what we always talk about, right? Is even if you are really down, a lot of players early on will say, I've lost this. Like, right? Like, how can I just scramble, do dumb plays to get quick points? But what you did was you set yourself up to have a chance. You threw your Hail Mary in it and you landed it.
Yeah. And that was, you know, I looked at him and I went, I need a 4 up on the advance to get there. And rolled it. It's like, all right, he made it. All right, now it put me in a place where, for me as a Knights player, that's always a very interesting game, because for me to go, I'll win this game by not killing anything, it's kind of antithetical to how Knights have always had to play, which has felt very binary. I have the table you or you table me, right?
Right.
I think it's really interesting, once the way new Knights play, but also to your experience as a general. I think 99% of Knight players out there just go oonga boonga smash smash robot time. But, you know, applying patience and analytical thought to how do you actually win the game is what separates you as a more successful competitive Knight player from the rest of them. And I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from that.
And that's where I'll say, Blake, you'll have to forgive me because I don't remember if I kind of dive into it here or and later, but as far as secondaries go, the Knight secondaries, I will pay credit to Games Workshop. I know there are some secondaries that need some touching up on both ends of the spectrum, but our secondaries are super interesting as far as it's not kill or be killed, right? Renew the Oath is an action, which is a Knight's player. At first, you go, why would I ever want to give up one of my Knights doing something for a turn in exchange for points?
It's a lot of points.
But when you look, and with the way obscurity works, a lot of times you're going to run into a first turn where you're going, I don't have anything. You know, I could kill a guardsman with this Warglaive's like thermal spear, or I could take 3 secondary points. I'm going to do that. And then I really love Honor the House, which is just, it ties into our honor mechanic where as long as you finish with more honor points or you are virtuous than you had at the start of the turn, you get 2 points. So each turn you can get 2 points just by doing what your oaths need you to do. And you want to be trying to gain honor. Renew the Oath plays into it really well, because on a 4 up, every time you renew the Oath, there's an honor point for you. Right. And at the end of the game, if you're honored, 2 points. And if you're virtuous, there's another 3 with the ability to get up to 15. And that was the other big thing for us at the end of the game, was going, I'm going to be like, I forgot about these points I have baked in that come into me at the end of the game. That's really nice. Yeah. And then Yield No Ground is the other one I took. And I love it in Battlefield Supremacy, because Stranglehold was so all or nothing as a Knights player. And Yield No Ground, it's 3 points, but three separate conditions for them. It lets me nibble along and just back it up 1-2 every turn to keep the secondaries in a place where I feel really comfortable with those three, that I can get 10 on each secondary in any game.
You think about it, it gives you a turn to where you can fall back and not feel bad about it too. You're like, I lost a point. Okay, yep. That's fine.
I lost 1 point, not I need to fall back and consolidate. I just gave up three secondary points of mine, and he got three, which is how Stranglehold used to feel for us.
Yeah. Brian, this has been very nice. You know I love talking Knights. And I hope you're ready for the Blakening. It's not the Nickening.
It's the Nickening, Blake. You literally, no talking for you next episode.
I will come and talk with you guys anytime. And especially, again, for anyone who gets the chance to play Sasha, he is one of the greatest opponents you'll ever play. And just, about this game.
And I'm super sad I'm not going to be joining for the other half of this episode with Sasha. But, you know, Brad's cool too, I guess.
We've become one because we played on three teams together now. I mean, Sasha, so we're Blasha now. We're the combined forces of the two of us. So
I like that.
Yeah, Blasha. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Join us for part two, where we're going to really talk about some Knights. We're going to talk about a lot of strategy, and it's going to be a whole Blakening part. So just buckle in for that. Make sure to check out our other podcast. We have the very, very vanilla flavored Art of War with the exceptionally talented Paul Murphy. We have the very Australian Art of War Down Under with the very late, very great Adam Camilleri. We, of course, are the Art of War Pistachio, the flavor you didn't know you loved till you tried us. And Nick's in there somewhere. Thanks for listening. Join us for part two.
Like what you just listened to? Check out Art of War and the Art of War Down Under podcast on the competitive 40K network, theartofwar40k.com.